We are in this build-up to Christmas, aren't we? It happens earlier every year. We've had the big event in Netley already. Colin's got his Christmas tree out, so it means it must not be far off. But if my daughter thinks it's the 22nd of December already, it's going to be a very long month. I don't know what your children are like, if you've got them, but patience is not one word that I would use much during the next few weeks. Waiting for this great day to arrive. Fortunately, now the advent calendars are open. They can see how long is left. It means I don't have to use that app on my phone that I've had for the last 2 months, telling them how many days, hours, minutes, and seconds are left till Christmas Day. But patience, when something exciting is about to happen, is something we're not always good at. And I think my girls have probably got it from me. I never used to sleep before Christmas. I could never wait. I'd do endless lists just waiting for this great thing to happen. And my parents would sometimes say I had the patience of a gnat, not the patience of Job. And Job is this character that we've read of this morning. Job, the main character in this great book in the Bible, who's renowned for his patience. Even if you know nothing else of Job, you may have heard people talking about someone having the patience of Job, or you have the patience of Job. A saying that's applied to those who, and I quote here, nobly persevere in the face of overwhelming hardships. And Colin's mentioned already for us, and we'll see in a little bit more detail with God's help this morning, that Job was a man who endured such hardship. He had so much, and it was all just taken away from him in an instant. And we've read of him recently as we've gone through the book of James. In James 5, as we were coming to the end, we read this: as an example of suffering and patience, brothers, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord. Behold, we consider those blessed who remain steadfast. And then here we have, here you have heard of the patience, it says in some versions, or here in our version, here you have heard of the steadfastness of Job. And you have seen the purpose of the Lord, how the Lord is compassionate and merciful. So I want us to consider Job with God's help this morning. I want us to think how we can be like him, how we can be challenged by him, and especially how we can be encouraged by him. But I want us to consider not so much how to be patient, but why he was patient. If you think about all the storms and trials that Job had to face in his life, it's not so much the anchor of Job that I want to consider, but what that anchor was in. Why is it he could be so steadfast? Why is it he could be so patient? Not because of himself, but what he was hoping and trusting in. I don't know much about boats. I probably should, being in Southampton, but I don't. So John, you'll put me right if I'm wrong on this, but from what I know of boats, you need something solid for your anchor to grab onto. You need a solid rock that's embedded in the seabed. If the anchor just drags across sand, it's not going to hold fast. And Job was steadfast because his patience, his hope, his certainty was not in sand, not in things that would give way, but in something solid. Perhaps an illustration that I understand more that may help you a bit more is if you think about putting a shelf on the wall. I've done quite a few in my time, and I've thought that, well, the best thing to do is to buy some really good anchor bolts, something really sturdy. But it doesn't matter how good that bolt is if all I'm putting it into is a bit of plasterboard, something just flimsy that's going to give way. It needs to go into something solid. It needs to go into some brick. And so this morning, with God's help, I want us to consider, First, what Job was not putting his trust and his hope in. Job's sand, as it were. And then secondly, Job's rock. What was his patience? What was his hope? What was his certainty embedded in? And I want us to consider this particularly this morning because it has been a hard week for us as a church. We've lost a dear friend, a sister. And at times like these, we grieve, and rightly so. But at times like these, we need to remember what Paul said in 1 Thessalonians 4. He said, "I don't want you to be uninformed, brothers and sisters, about those who are asleep, that you may not grieve as others who do not have hope." I want to remind us all this morning of the hope that Job had, the hope that Gloria had, the hope that I trust each one of us here has. But let's first, as we look at Job, consider his sand, the things that he wasn't putting his hope and his trust in. People say sometimes that Christianity is a crutch for weak-minded people, something to fill a void, something to give them meaning in life when they have nothing else. Well, that cannot be said of Job, because Job is a man who had everything. If you've got a Bible with you, if you just turn back to the beginning of this book, to Job 1, we read that Job was a great man. Not someone in need of a crutch, not someone in need of something to fill up his life. Here, Job 1, verse 1, there was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job. And that man was blameless and upright, one who feared God and turned away from evil. A righteous man, a good man. But look what else we're told about him here, verse 2. There were born to him 7 sons and 3 daughters. I know what some of that's like. He possessed 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, 500 female donkeys, and very many servants. So that this man was the greatest of all the people of the East. You know, this is the Richard Branson, the Bill Gates of his time, the man who had it all. And yet he was blameless and upright. We read this as we carry on into verse 4. His sons used to go and hold a feast in the house of each one on his day, and would send and invite their 3 sisters to eat and drink with them. And when the days of their feast had run their course, Job would send and would consecrate them. He would rise early in the morning and offer burnt offerings according to the number of them all. For Job said, "It may be that my children have sinned and cursed God in their hearts." Thus Job did continually. What a man. What a great man. What a godly man. And perhaps you might think, well, I'd be really godly. I'd be really good. I'd be thanking God if he'd bless me like that. If he'd filled my garages with cars and my house with servants and family and friends and wealth. Surely this is why Job loves God so much. Look at what he's got. Well, if you know this story, you know that that's exactly what Satan thought. If you look down at the headings there, you can see that that Satan comes before God and he talks about Job. And there in verse 9 he says, "Does Job fear God for no reason? Have you not put a hedge around him and his house and all that he has on every side? You've blessed the work of his hands. His possessions have increased in the land. But stretch out your hand, touch all that he has, and he will curse you to your face." Was Job's life anchored in what he owned? Was it anchored in his reputation, in the goodwill of others? Was it anchored in his family that he loved so much? Well, we see that Job loses everything. In chapter 1, His property and his children are taken just in one day, with raiders coming, fire from heaven, a wind coming, knocking the house down where his children were feasting. There, verse 19, one of the servants comes. He says, the house has fallen down. It fell upon the young people. They are dead. And I alone have escaped to tell you. And what does Job do? Verse 20, he arose, tore his robe, shaved his head, and fell on the ground and worshipped. He said, naked I came from my mother's womb, naked shall I return. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. In chapter 2, Job's health is gone. Everything else that he owned, but he still had his body, he still had his health, and then that is attacked. And his wife comes before him, verse 9, and said, you still hold fast your integrity. Curse God and die. But he said to her, you speak as one of the foolish women would speak. Shall we receive good from God, and shall we not receive evil? In all this, Job did not sin with his lips. How can Job, how can anyone act like this? When everything is stripped away, when everything they have worked for, everything that they hold dear is taken away. How is it that Job even remains firm in his faith? Yes, he grieves, but he doesn't turn his back on God. He falls down and worships him. He says, well, God's given me good and now he's bringing evil. But it's because Job did not put his hope, his certainty, his trust in all of these things that he had. Yes, he had property. But that's not what his life was based on. Yes, he had wealth, but that's not what he lived for. Yes, he loved his family. But that was not his everything. That was not his rock. Yes, he had reputation. Yes, he had good health. Yes, he was well thought of. But when all of those things were gone, he still trusted God. And that's why I find that chapter in Job 19 that Colin read for us earlier so remarkable. You see, we've seen what Job does not base his life on. But in Job 19, he reveals so clearly what his rock is. The contrast in the chapter is phenomenal, because you just have his heart pouring out, don't you? You can see his pain. You can see the agonies that he's going through. You can see the questions that he's asking. And then suddenly here at the end of the chapter, you just have him bursting out, and then he can't hold it back. For I know that my Redeemer lives, and at the last he will stand upon the earth. Everything else has been stripped away. All the sand has given way, and all that is left is this rock that he's basing his trust and his hope upon. And this rock is his Redeemer, his God. That's how he's been able to stand. That's how he's been able to weather these storms. Because he is standing on his Redeemer. Where do we build our lives upon? What do we anchor them in? Before we come and consider a little bit more about Job's Redeemer, let us just stop and think. Are any of these things that Job had perhaps things that we wrongly build our lives upon? Things that we may have been blessed with? Families that God may have been good enough to give us? but things ultimately that can be stripped away. Things ultimately that can disappoint. Things ultimately, as Job so rightly said, we have to leave behind. Naked I came from my mother's womb, naked I shall return. Job knew that these things weren't good enough, but do we? Do we sometimes fall for the lie? Do we sometimes fall into the trap of thinking these things will be good enough? Come on, it's what everyone tells us. It's what all of those adverts, yes, even those M&S ones tell us, that you just have these things and you'll be content. Have these things and you'll be happy. But they let us down. They disappoint. They won't hold us fast when the storms come. But Job knew where to anchor his life, in his Redeemer, in his God. For I know that my Redeemer lives. I just want us to take those words and just meditate on them and think about what they mean for a few moments. A Redeemer, it's a word we've used a lot this morning. I didn't choose the hymns. Colin didn't know what chapter I was taking when he chose them, but God's good. We've spoken so often this morning. I will glory in my Redeemer. We've talked of a God who has paid the price. And it's all language of buying back, isn't it? If you give something away to a pawnbroker's shop because you need the money, if things go well, you can go back and redeem that item. You can buy back what is yours. This is the language that Job is using. It's language that comes all through the Bible. We read this in the Psalms, Psalm 130. O Israel, hope in the Lord, for with the Lord there is steadfast love. With him there is plentiful redemption. And he will redeem Israel from all his iniquities. The Bible speaks so often of the God of heaven being a God who redeems, a God who pays the price to have his children back. We do not come to talk about religion here this morning. We do not come and base our hope on things that we can do, on making ourselves right with God. Rather, we come, and like Job, we can say that, yes, we have a Redeemer, a God who has paid the price. The price is paid. Come, let us enter in. And what a price it was. God sending his only Son into this world to suffer and die, to give his own life, to pay that eternal price for our sins. The God of the Bible is a redeeming God. Peter says this, 1 Peter 1:18, for you know it was not with perishable things such as silver or gold that you were redeemed, but with the precious blood of Christ. Job knew what his God was like. He was looking forward. We look back and see that the price has been paid, that the God of heaven is a redeeming God. But what does Job say? He doesn't say, I know that a Redeemer lives. I know that my Redeemer lives. This wasn't just some theoretical theology for Job. This isn't just some ideology that he'd heard about. This is personal. This is his Redeemer. This is someone who has paid for him. And that's why Christians can stand. This is why Christians can have faith, because this God is a personal God, a God who has paid the price for their sins, a God who has redeemed them from the pit. Job knew this for himself. And he knows as well, we see so clearly here that his Redeemer is living. His Redeemer is still alive. We read this in Hebrews 7. Therefore, he is able to save completely those who come to God through him, because he always lives to intercede for them. I don't know what you think God is like this morning. People have such different and strange ideas from all sorts of places. I urge you, if you don't know what God is like, look at what he has told us about himself. Look at what he has done. The God of heaven is a redeeming God, a God who has paid the price for his people's sins. We have a God who is alive, a God who is personal. And as Job found, when you have that rock to put the anchor of your life into, then when the storms and trials come, you can stand firm. Because Job has spoken here about all of his trials, hasn't he? You can hear the sorrow and the anguish in his heart. And as you read through the book of Job, you can see so clearly that he just can't get his head around what's going on. He doesn't understand it. His friends say he's sinned and he must have done something terribly wrong for all of these calamities to come upon him. Job doesn't feel that's true, and yet he doesn't know why God is acting like he has. And the book is just full of questions. The book is full of Job's anguish. And yet he's never shaken on what God is like. Our dear sister Gloria suffered for many years with her health, didn't she? And she was always so honest about her struggles and always so honest about the questions that she had. There were times when she didn't know, times when she didn't understand why it was still going on. But like Job, she trusted her God. She knew that he wasn't changing. He knew that he was her Redeemer. And here we come as Job looks at all of the tragedy of his life. He looks at all that's gone wrong. The only thing that is facing him now is death. Surely his anchor is going to come loose here. Surely there is no hope here. Yes, God has been a comfort to him in this life when everything has been taken away from him. But surely now, that hope's going to waver. Not in the least. Look here, verse 26. It seems an impossible statement, doesn't it? And after my skin has been thus destroyed, yet in my flesh, I shall see God. I shall see for myself. My eyes shall behold and not another's. Even when he knows that death is staring him in the face, and that if that is going to come his way, his hope is still secure. Because this is a Redeemer that redeems from the grave. This is a God who gives hope for eternity. And Job knows that if his body is destroyed, if it's eaten by the worms, that he will still stand and he will still see his God face to face. That is the hope, that is the certainty for those who put their trust in God. Because this is a hope that goes beyond the beckoning grave. This is a hope and a certainty for eternity. So that those who know that God is their Redeemer can say, after my skin has been destroyed, yet in my flesh I will see God. Oh, I hope that encourages you this morning. I hope that thrills your soul. Because in times when we do grieve, in times when we have lost those near and dear to us, we can stand here and say, well, this was Gloria's hope and certainty. She is standing, looking at her Redeemer. What is your hope? What is your rock in your life? There are so many things that we can anchor our life on. So many things that we can live for that let us down. Things that do not last for eternity. Things that do not go beyond the grave. There is only one hope for the world to come, and that is in God, our Redeemer. If you do not know him this morning, I urge you to come to him and find the salvation that he has provided. To come and cast yourself at his feet, because he has paid the price so that he can be called your Redeemer. If you do know this God, then let me encourage you. Nothing is going to cause that rock to move. Nothing is going to cause it to shake or give way. Not even all the hosts of hell, not even death itself. You can have that certainty of Job, that even after our skin has been destroyed, yet in our flesh, we shall see God. May our hope, may our refrain be that I know that my Redeemer lives. Praise be to God.